This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Coal miner's daughter for you, Loretta Lynn, who passed away at the age of 90. We're going to talk a little bit about Loretta, but good morning and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy, Big Ed Davis, thank you for joining us. It is Wednesday, October the 5th, and a beautiful day it is in Tampa Bay, low 70s, sunny, no humidity, or very little. We're going to be talking in a few minutes with Taylor Barkley, of the Center for Growth and Opportunity. We're going to talk about the Supreme Court plan to look at online protection for media platforms. Can a Google or a Facebook or a Twitter be sued for what its contributors say on the site? We're going to talk about it with them, so stay tuned for that. And the national debt, now topping $31 trillion. Nobody even noticed, I don't think. Does anybody really care? Does anybody really care? We're going to talk about it. We're going to examine it. And President Biden complaining about the press shouting questions at him. This from a guy who hides from the questions in the press. We're going to take a look. And in our ultimate top 10, the top 10 greatest movie directors of all time. Of all time. So stay tuned for that as well. So Loretta Lynn has passed away. She was 90 years old. She was a country music icon. And throughout her career, it spanned about 60 years. She won every music award known to musicians. Every one of them. She was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame in 1988. She was an amazing woman. She wrote fearlessly about things like sex and love and cheating husbands and divorce and birth control. Sometimes her material got her in trouble on radio programming. So they would censor some of the things that she said. Of course, Coal Miner's Daughter. She had another one, You Ain't Woman Enough. The Pill. Don't Come Home A-Drinkin' With Lovin' On Your Mind. I love it. I mean, this is why people related to her. You know? She wasn't afraid to sing about all those things.
Her husband used to get into a lot of predicaments, and I guess she gave her plenty of song material, right?
I think exactly. I believe Tommy Lee Jones played her husband in that movie with Sissy Spacek playing Loretta Lynn. Coal Miner's Daughter was the name of the movie, if I remember correctly, and it portrayed her husband as a philanderer. And he was also, I think, like her public relations person. So it was sort of a wild thing. But anyway, a salute to Loretta Lynn, who has passed away at the age of 90 years. Oh, boy. So, the national debt. Does anybody care that it has now surpassed $31 trillion? We just released the data yesterday from the Treasury Department. You want to be exact? It's $31.123 trillion. Nobody can even understand the amount of money. And the only reason it's $31.123 trillion is that we let the government print money with no backing. That's why. We used to be on a standard called the gold standard, which meant you could only have as much money in circulation as you had gold in your possession. And that's when the dollar really meant something. And we didn't get close to this kind of national debt when we were on the gold standard. Richard Nixon took us off the gold standard in the early 70s when he was president. So this new milestone has been reached even as the feds have slowed their spending with the waning of the COVID-19 virus. But still, I mean, if you look at what Biden and company has tried to do over the last couple of years that he's been in with this so-called inflation reduction bill and all this other stuff, now he wants to forgive student loans. Guess what? People, somebody has to pay. You don't just wave a wand and say, all right, all the student loans are forgiven. No, you don't. The people that loaned out the money have to get paid the money by somebody. And so we print money. And we send it to them. That's how we do it. You know, everybody says, oh, my taxes are going to get raised because we're doing this and we're doing that. No, your taxes probably are going to stay about the same as they were the year before. Take a look. Does the IRS, have you seen your taxes? No, they haven't. They haven't gone up. They've stayed pretty much the same. But we're continuing to borrow so much money that we go into this nonsensical debt. And at some point, believe it or not, at some point, the merry-go-round stops, okay? And the free ride ends. Not a free ride, but the ride ends. And away you go. So, away we go. You know that Barack Obama doubled the national debt in 8 years while he was with, when we were at about, I'm going to say, about 11 or 12 trillion. He comes in. 8 years later, we're at 22 or 23 trillion. Now we're at 31 trillion.
I was going to say, those are the good old days when we were only at 12 trillion, 10 trillion dollars.
I know it.
Yeah, we were running large.
I know it. You know what have they done? You know this whole thing, if you put a single dollar bill on top of each other, that it would go past Mars or something if you, I don't know exactly what it was, but how many 30 trillion or 20 trillion, would represent? It's just, I don't know. Anyway, another thing. We've been looking at, for a while, the gas prices going down, but Ed, have you noticed it's starting to go the other way again?
Yeah, it's going to be big trouble.
American consumers should expect gas prices to keep going up as a result of various domestic and global factors. You mentioned this thing about us pulling all of this gas and oil out of the reserve.
Strategic.
And we got to put that back at some point.
Yeah. Here's the thing.
And what are we going to get it to put it back?
We've been pulling. I think we're at over 200 million barrels at present. And at the end of the month, that runs out, what he's plan on doing. And OPEC has decided to cut back its production. So you've got that, and you've got that, and then the fact that the release is going to stop. Oil's going to shoot up. I mean,
absolutely.
Gas prices are going to shoot up. Now, right now he's taking credit for the gas prices down, but when they go back up again, it's Putin's war again.
Yeah, and they are going up again. I mean, they're going up again as we talk.
We've made some progress, though. Because it's no longer Trump's fault. It's still Putin's fault.
Exactly.
We're making progress. We're making progress.
A little bit of progress. At some point, when you take credit for gas prices going down, can you take the blame for them going up?
No.
Oh, I see. So, as you said, OPEC is cutting back. So what's that going to do? It's going to raise the cost of gas even more. So this is what we have to look forward to. And I cannot think of a dumber thing that Biden did to make sure that Democrats do not retain control of Congress than by suppressing the production of energy in our country.
But you notice the strategic release of oil reserves is going to run out right before the election.
There you go.
So they're timing that out.
Great timing.
They're trying to get gas prices down around $2.50 a gallon.
Good luck with that.
They're trying. And then they can say, hey, look, we did it. You know, we got it done. And, of course, once the election's over and you've got the fact that we've got no more strategic oil, God forbid we need it, and the fact that OPEC's going to cut their production, gas prices are going to shoot up $5 a gallon within a month.
Yeah. It doesn't bode well. We had two good days of the stock market, I must say. I will hope that it continues. I'm afraid to look. I'm afraid it's going to go the other way again. Anyway, let's take our break. Going to change horses here. We're going to talk with Taylor Barkley of the Center for Growth and Opportunity about the Supreme Court. They've decided to look at online protection for media platforms.
Sunshine sky, and there's a reason why I'm feeling so high. Must be the season when that love light shines all around us.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets, from animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, this is Steve Vaccaro, psychologist and host of the Chapters Wrap Live. Each live show will bring on top-notch guests from the nonprofit world. We are the advocacy show that provides a platform for other advocates. So please tune in on your drive home from work to share your voice. The Chapters Wrap, where unity and diversity meet one chapter at a time.
Listen to Kicking Unhealthy Relationships to the Curb at 5, Voices for Change at 6, Reach Out with Ray and Steve at 7, and the Chapters Wrap at 8, Wednesdays, here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back. Freedom Works on a Wednesday. Delighted to have Taylor Barkley joining us. He is a technology and innovation director at the Center for Growth and Opportunity. We're going to talk about a Supreme Court case that will be coming up, Gonzalez versus Google. Taylor, welcome to Freedom Works.
Thanks for having me on the show, Paul. It's great to be here.
Absolutely our pleasure. Now, this gets a little complicated, but apparently...
It does.
It gets very complicated, let's be honest. But it has to do with, you know, platforms like Google and Twitter and Facebook, and what people go on and say. You know, they get the opportunity to come on and they say what they feel, and so the question becomes whether or not the platforms themselves can be sued, because some of the things that are said, let's face it, can hurt people, can change things. So. Would you mind telling us a little bit, Taylor, about the background of this case?
Absolutely. And it can be a convoluted tale, so I'll try to keep it as simple and as short as possible. So Section 230 is, when I first started doing tech policy 10 years ago, Section 230 was this obscure, tiny part of the legal code, about 26 words, actually. That no one was talking about, and, you know, fast forward to, you know, 2018-19, it's being chanted at political rallies. So it's really gotten into the spotlight because, as you say, it's at the core of, frankly, how social media platforms operate. Section 230 answered the question of who is responsible for speech online. So, you know, I post something on a platform like, you know, Twitter, a message board, a small website, say a comment on a local newspaper even. You know, is it the local newspaper that's responsible for my comment, or is it me? And Section 230 is a kind of tort reform that clarified it's the user responsible and not the platform that hosts the content. And so this case that we're seeing, Gonzalez v. Google, came out of, you know, in 2015 in Paris, there was an ISIS terrorist attack that killed over 100 people, one of them a young woman, Nahimi Gonzalez, I believe is how I pronounce her name. And the family brought this case against Google, which is the parent company of YouTube, because their allegation is that YouTube's algorithms recommended videos, ISIS-linked videos, that promoted this violent terrorist attack. And the lower courts over the past few years have said, we will not hear this case because these algorithmic suggested videos are protecting the companies, in this case Google, from liability. And multiple courts have said, because of Section 230, we're not going to hear the case. And so there was a petition to the Supreme Court to take up the case. So it's a bit unusual in that fact, in that there wasn't disagreement in the lower courts to be resolved. It's the fact that these lower courts didn't, hear the case at all. And, this is also historic because this is the first time that Section 230 is being brought before the Supreme Court.
That's very interesting.
So it really is historic in that sense. But, I will say it's also taking place in this broader context of, Texas and Florida passing legislation that has been ruled on by circuit courts. But that's a different topic than the one that's at issue here.
Yeah.
All involve content moderation, but, they're different topics. So we can maybe parse that out if helpful. Or we can go different.
Which one of the justices on the Supreme Court decided to take the case, do you know?
It's unclear at this point.
Okay.
It's a team effort.
It was a team effort. Because there will be a petition to a particular judge on the court, and that judge will kind of be the go-between, and then to decide whether or not the case will be considered. But this is so interesting because algorithms, which are mathematical formulas, I guess, for allowing content online. I mean, we've heard about, for instance, Google being criticized for its algorithms actually censoring, I guess in this case, censoring conservative speech. You've heard about that. But in this case, the algorithms, according to this suit, allowed videos that influenced and resulted in the death of this woman?
So, yeah, that's correct. I mean, that's roughly the issue. And I think, here, as you were saying, this is a complicated case, which makes it, interesting in that the Supreme Court decided to take it up because, we have ISIS involved. We have the allegation here is that Google was violating the Anti-Terrorism Act. So that's the law at issue here. And, we have to kind of put ourselves back in 2015, which is, ancient history when it comes to technology.
Yes.
And even, ISIS right now, of course, is barely anything compared to what it was. It was rising up. It was a real threat to the area in the Middle East and was much more active in the mid-teens. So, as you were saying, algorithms are a lot of these platforms, these big platforms and small ones, operate because there's so much information that's being uploaded by individual users every minute of the day globally. This is a global platform that has to manage, millions, tens of millions posts an hour, probably.
Yeah.
So they have to figure out some way to, get us, the users and consumers, relevant information and, frankly, protect us from the vile stuff that's being posted.
Yeah,
every day.
Exactly.
So
right.
Algorithms are a helpful tool along those ways.
Yeah,
the algorithms, I think, are a boon and a benefit.
It's an amazingly huge responsibility. And then you've also got to work with other countries so that your platform will be allowed in their countries, right? I mean, we hear about involvement with China and maybe other countries. And if your algorithm doesn't work the way they want it to, they can just totally flip off the switch.
Right. These are global platforms. 90% of Facebook users, for instance, are not American users. And in America, we have the First Amendment and free speech protections that go into play. But not every country has a First Amendment, these free speech protections, and this liberty mindset. And, you know, that's why this case is interesting, because the Supreme Court could weigh in here on the issue of, you know, what counts as a publisher, and is algorithmic recommendation, does that count as publishing when we're talking about such volumes of internationally sourced content?
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Taylor Barkley. He is a technology and innovation director at the Center for Growth and Opportunity about a Supreme Court case, Gonzalez versus Google. So is there is this case going to be taken up in this particular term, Taylor, of the Supreme Court? Is it being tucked away for later? Do you know?
The understanding is that the Supreme Court, yeah, will take it up this term. So we will likely see an opinion with, you know, over the next year, I would expect. And then we have likely more Section 230 cases to arrive. You know, as I was mentioning before, Gonzalez v. Google is on a very narrow issue having to do with online content moderation. Mm-hmm. But we have the, you know, Florida and Texas circuit court splits on their state laws that have to do with these laws were enacted by Florida and Texas, respectively. They're pretty similar to bar social media platforms for, censoring political content. So they have to be politically neutral, as it were. And the 11th Circuit and 5th Circuit disagreed. So that's the classic kind of prompt for the Supreme Court to take up a case. So that's another Section 230 case that's expected over the next year.
Wow, how complicated this is going to be. I'm going to ask you something about Elon Musk and Twitter. You knew this was coming.
Sure.
Elon Musk has decided perhaps that he's going to go ahead and purchase Twitter. So he's done another 180
yes.
degrees. And a lot of, looking at the media, a lot of them seem to be upset that he is going to end up possibly taking it over, because they fear that Twitter will then end up with what we might call either a libertarian or conservative bent, where it hasn't maybe been quite that way. I wanted to get your comment on this whole Elon Musk Twitter. Is it going to be good? Is it going to be good for us if he decides and does indeed take it over?
Well, you know, I'm glad you asked about this, because my organization, the Center for Growth and Opportunity, we polled Americans on their opinion about Elon Musk's takeover of Twitter back in this is the end of July, early August, and this has been a roller coaster ride. It seems every day the news changes.
It does.
What will Elon Musk decide to do next? So, you know, continue to hang on. The story is not over by any means. But in our poll, we asked Americans what they think, and it was roughly split by thirds, with the majority, about 41%, agreeing that it would be good for the future of social media, with about 30% disagreeing with the notion it would be good for the future of social media, and 30% of Americans saying, I don't know. So, you know, Americans' opinions seem to lean in favor of it being a good thing. And mm-hmm. you're right that there is kind of wringing of hands and gnashing of teeth amongst some sectors of the media community on Musk's potential takeover. Because I think we should expect, if this deal comes through, and it's still a big if, I should say, if it comes through, that changes will happen on content moderation, staffing, and Twitter might become a different looking place than we know it now.
I wonder if Elon Musk wakes up and, depending upon what side of the bed he gets out on, yeah, I think I do want to buy it. No, I'm not so sure. I really want to get involved.
That may be the case. who can say, right?
Yeah. I mean, one thing we can't say about Elon Musk, he's an amazing person. All of the things that he's involved in, and He might be the most interesting person on the planet right now with all of this going on. But anyway, getting back finally to this Gonzalez versus Google and the Supreme Court taking it on. So let's say that they end up ruling that Google, and in this case, you know, online platforms, do bear a responsibility for their content. I just wonder what this would do. You know, what this would do to these platforms, and how they would handle it. And if they do bear a responsibility, might they be worried that they would have to make some sort of a financial payout? And how many people would want to bring and sue them? And how many of the suits are you know, frivolous, you know, all of that, all of that if indeed they have to take responsibility.
Right, right. Yeah, so this case, Gonzalez v. Google, would be on the algorithmic recommendation. So say if they said, okay, Google, social media platforms, you are responsible for the videos, any kind of content, the search results that come up, you are liable for that content. I think, what Section 230 has done, what it did in the early days and throughout the history of the internet, is it allows companies to, moderate content. And then, people think of, maybe the nefarious moderation, but I think the vast majority of it is the stuff that is good, the vile content, terrorist content, even in this case of ISIS, social media companies, search engines, they learned a lot of lessons and got better at filtering out this content. So I think what we would see, say, if tech companies are held liable for content, we would probably see a couple things. We'd see them do nothing, so no content moderation. So, you're getting less relevant search results. Probably you're seeing content that runs the gamut and is more like the total free speech platforms out there that can tend to get pretty vile fairly quickly. Or we would see kind of the pendulum swing in the other direction, where it's even more tightly controlled. We see less speech, less content put on these platforms. Yeah. Because the platforms would have to be like a broadcaster, say, like, so you're, your radio show, like, you want to keep a tighter control over the guests that appear, perhaps. And I think these giant companies have to deal with tens of millions of posts from users all around the globe every single day. We'd see them crack down more. So I think those are kind of the two paths we would like to see if this ruling came out.
It's just amazing once the internet was created. It's a whole new universe of thought and how we protect people and how we guard it and how we allow free speech and how we, have to watch. I mean, it's just amazing. It's not like when you just had the radio, the newspaper, and the TV, and, you could kind of figure out something. Not anymore.
I like to say it put a global broadcasting tool in the pocket of most of the global population. Some 3 billion people have smartphones.
You're exactly right.
Everyone has a potential TV and radio station. And as you said, it brings up a whole broad array of questions. And frankly, we're still early days and we're figuring it out, and it's going to be messy, but it's also exciting.
Yeah, you're right. It's still the wild, wild west when it comes to the internet. Taylor, thank you so very much. Really enjoyed the conversation. Look forward to having you on again down the road.
Yeah, thanks so much, Paul. I would love to be back on, and really appreciate you giving me some time on your show.
Absolutely. It's our pleasure. All right. Taylor Barkley, Center for Growth and Opportunity. Very interesting. We're going to take our break. When we come back, what's going on with Biden? He's complaining about the press shouting questions at him. I mean, the guy stares when you ask a question and wanders away. We're going to take a look at all of this after the break.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, this is Steve Vaccaro, psychologist and host of the Chapters Wrap Live. Each live show will bring on top-notch guests from the nonprofit world. We are the advocacy show that provides a platform for other advocates. So please tune in on your drive home from work to share your voice. The Chapters Wrap, where unity and diversity meet one chapter at a time.
Listen to Kicking Unhealthy Relationships to the Curb at 5, Voices for Change at 6, Reach Out with Ray and Steve at 7, and the Chapters Wrap at 8, Wednesdays, here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
What's the buzz in Tampa Bay? Senior Voice America Radio, a unique morning variety program delivering the latest commentary on politics by host and political analyst Tim Bryce and the up-to-minute happenings of Wall Street. Beyond politics and finance, they scale the scholar's rampart by including topics on religion and nutrition with thought-provoking guests and interviews. Tune in every weekday from 8 to 10 a.m. on this Tan Talk station. Senior Voice America, serving our nation's seasoned citizens for over 4 decades.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more.
Hey, we are back on a Wednesday. We thank you so very, very much for being with us. And, President Joe Biden, I have never seen a president take fewer questions or want to take any questions from reporters. He was criticized yesterday for his response to reporters that were shouting questions at him while he was being, they say here, escorted out. That's a nice word for, I don't know. Anyway, being escorted out of a White House abortion task force meeting. So I guess as they tried to ask questions, Biden smiled and said to the press, "You're among the only press in the world that does this." "Seriously, seriously," he says. "What? What's he talking about?" In response, critics really jumped down his throat for attacking the press despite refusing to answer their questions. When was the last time the guy actually held a legitimate press conference, you know? And he took a whole bunch of questions for an hour.
From reporters once again and even dissing them out loud as they were shuffled out of the room by his staffers.
Mr. President, you've talked.
Thank you very much. We need you guys to move. Thank you very much. Please. Thank you.
Among the only press in the world that does this. Seriously.
Yeah, there you go. And you know, the press has been awfully patient with this guy. Let's be honest. Do you remember how quickly they went into attack mode on Trump? And Trump gave them access to him. And he would answer their questions. And they would go after him with their fangs out. In this case, the Trump has been more or less overall kind of lapdogs to Biden. You know, you never saw them jumping and screaming and yelling. I mean, now they're finally starting to do a little bit of it because he won't give them any access. Here's John Cooper, who's with the Heritage Foundation. We've had him on the show. He said, this guy routinely, meaning Biden, this guy routinely hides from the press, rarely takes questions, almost never does pressers, and has the gall to criticize them for trying to ask questions on one of the few opportunities they get. Here's a speaker for the Young America Foundation and Turning Point USA. He says, in the United Kingdom, the prime minister has to publicly defend their own policies during televised debates every week. In the United States, Joe Biden complains that he has to answer questions every few months. I mean, it's really getting to be ridiculous. I mean, they have sold his people, his entourage, whatever, his group, his handlers have so little confidence in him.
One of the things I saw in that video, of course you couldn't see the video, but you could hear, is the staffer being very, very vigilant and putting himself between the president and the reporters. In other words, you got to go through me, and we don't want you to ask questions, period, and get you shoveled, because he doesn't have a prompter in front of him. I mean, they don't want him going off the cuff.
No, God, no.
I mean, that's all part of it.
Well, we know that. I'll never get that visual out of my mind of the Easter Bunny actually pulling him away. Remember that? The Easter Bunny came over
in
front of the camera and took him by the hand and led him away from reporters. Yeah. I mean, that to me is the perfect example of what's going on. It was just scary. Now, one of the things, I'm sure this is one of the reasons he doesn't want to answer any questions, is because he's afraid that somebody's going to bring up his beloved son, Hunter Biden. And there is now a conservative legal group that is suing the FBI for allegedly concealing communication between the FBI and big tech companies, including Facebook, regarding info posted online about the contents of the Hunter Biden laptop. Now, the group is America First Legal. It's led by a Trumper, a former White House Trump advisor, Stephen Miller. And they filed a Freedom of Information Act stating that the FBI is violating the law by failing to publicize its communications with Facebook and other big tech platforms to censor news and info about Hunter's laptop immediately before the 2020 election. In other words, the FBI was involved in contacting places like Facebook and Google and the like, and seeing to it that publicity on the Hunter Biden laptop was going to be suppressed. And by suppressing it, they could keep it from becoming a big issue in the election between Trump and Joe Biden. And now we've got, who's that guy, Bob Alinsky?
Bobulinski, the guy that was involved with Hunter Biden as he was making all of these agreements around the world in China and Russia and the Ukraine and the like, getting this this money flowing. So Bobulinski goes on and talks now about, yeah, did Joe Biden know about it? Yes, he did. He was very much the chairman of the whole thing. In fact, even Hunter was referring to him like a chairman. You know, but whenever Biden was asked a question about Hunter Biden, he'd go, no, I don't know anything about it. I know nothing about what my son is doing. Well, everybody knows it's an ultimately direct lie that he didn't know anything about it. So this lawsuit states that the FBI and big tech, including Facebook, colluded together to interfere with the presidential election by falsely labeling the laptop Russian disinformation, and then by censoring all news about its content. Well, we know that that was the case. But isn't it scary that our own Justice Department, FBI, is involved in suppressing that kind of information so that they can direct the outcome of a presidential election? So as a result, Senator Chuck Grassley, he's a Republican from Iowa, and Ron Johnson, a Republican from Wisconsin, called on Facebook to turn over communications between the FBI and Facebook regarding the Hunter Biden laptop. The senators are also asking that the FBI agents appear for an interview. Well, of course, they're in the minority right now, are they not? So it's going to be very hard for the Democratic majority to go, yeah, let's get them in here. Let's really find out more about the Hunter Biden laptop. I'm not so sure that's good. We're going to have to wait. Hopefully after the November elections, we're going to get more information on Hunter Biden. And if anything, I mean, I'm thinking about why they when they tried to impeach Donald Trump over a phone call to the Ukrainian president about looking into what Biden as vice president was doing to squelch a prosecutor in a huge case in the Ukraine. They went after Trump and they impeached him for that. And but President Biden can be the ringmaster of money being directed through his son from China and Russia and the Ukraine and God knows where else. Holy Toledo, it's kind of a scary scenario. Speaking of Trump and what was going on in that election, former President Trump's legal team has elevated its battle to the Supreme Court regarding the documents that are being reviewed by the Department of Justice that were taken from his Mar-a-Lago home. Now, a U.S. district judge had injuncted the DOJ, in other words, had stopped them from examining documents until a special master could take a look. And the DOJ wants to continue to go ahead with certain documents while the special master is looking. And Trump and his legal team is saying, let the special master determine which documents you can look at, which documents you cannot. Don't you make the decision on that.
Remember when that first started? I think we did that show that the next day, and we said that when this comes out, it better be a slam dunk.
Yeah.
How long has it been now?
No and slam dunk that I can see.
They ain't even picked up the ball yet, no. For crying out loud.
No, it's rolling around all
and you know what?
Out of bounds.
This will get put on the back burner, and something else, there's 30 days left. There's 30 days left. Something else is going to come up. Something.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. They're going to throw something out there right
sure
at the
they
end.
Are.
Yeah. Before Trump and his team has a chance.
And nobody's
to
held accountable.
It.
All this money and all these investigations. And there's not one charge been brought up. The only thing that's fishing around is that whacked out woman up in New York, the prosecutor up there that couldn't get him criminally for anything, so now they want to go after him civilly.
Right.
Come on. Is that really what the state of New York is paying you for? Seriously?
Well, she's had a vendetta ever since he became president.
She ran on it. She ran her campaign was, I'll get Trump. Put me in and I'll get Trump.
That's it.
I'm sorry, but somebody needs to pay or get fired.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let us take our final break. And among other things, we're going to give you a top 10 that will tell you the greatest movie directors of all time.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tantalk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
Hey, you new to the area or just want to know about the best hidden gems and upcoming events? Stay tuned. Be Local Buzz with Devin takes you to these places, introduces you to the best businesses, and tells you about upcoming buzz. Preset your radio to Tan Talk 1340 AM or 106.1 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. That is the Be Local Buzz with Devin on Tan Talk 1340 AM and 106 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. Looking forward to speaking with you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back for the final segment of Freedom Works on a Wednesday. We thank you so very much for being with us. By the way, we are here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Tantalk Radio Network. And if you can listen to us live, God bless you. But we know that you got things to do. 10 a.m. might not be a great time to listen. So thanks to Big Ed, we put all our shows on tape, on podcast. He puts them up there on our website, bless his heart. So all you have to do is whenever you want to listen to us, go to OurFreedomWorks.com. O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com. Click on the podcast button, and you will see, starting with our most recent show, who the guest will be in the top 10, the whole bit. Ed puts it all up there for you, OurFreedomWorks.com. So, Ed, I was looking to see what the stock market is doing right now. I'm afraid it's probably gone back down into the red. But we enjoyed 2 days of, we actually went back over the 30,000
mark.
Yeah,
I saw that.
Yeah.
I think last I looked, it was 300 down.
So 300 down, okay.
It was right at the 30,000.
Yeah. I'm not sure that we're going to go up too much more, but we keep our fingers crossed. ADP comes out every at the end of every month with a jobs report. I haven't looked at the story, but saw the headline. They are claiming that we have some surprisingly new positive employment figures for the month of September. But I've noticed also that I've seen ADP come out with some positive report. Then we get the U.S. labor report that tends to be a bad one. So I don't always trust ADP.
Yeah, I saw a report this morning that I don't know if it's changed or it's state by state, but when you because we're still wondering where all these workers are that we used to have at restaurants and stuff like that. It's to my understanding that it used to be or whatever that when you filed for unemployment, you had a certain amount of time to get a job or you were going to lose your benefits.
Right.
Now it's all you got to do is just prove that you've been looking.
Oh yeah, it's a joke.
Is it? Oh, that's why. Okay, so
it's a joke.
So that's where they're getting their money from. Okay, that makes sense. So they're getting the unemployment to stay home, and all they're doing is just saying, "Oh well, I went to Joe's Bar and Grill, and they got a slippery floor. I can't work there."
You got it. In fact, some years ago, I mean, it's been that way for a while. And quite frankly, all you had to do was list some companies that maybe you knew somebody there, and you list the name of that person there, and you put it on, and you send it in, or you click, and it goes in. And that was all they needed. And, I mean, people just got away with murder. They continued to draw. I mean, at some point, your benefits, no matter how long, your benefits will end.
Didn't it used to be like that? You had a certain amount of time to get a job.
Yeah, X number of weeks. They would pay you up to X number of weeks. So what would happen? Everybody would draw their money for the entire term. And as they were coming towards the end, then they really started looking for a job.
And if you didn't get a job, you went on welfare. And when you went on welfare, you didn't get a credit card looking thing to go through the grocery store.
No, you didn't.
You got them big coupon books.
Stamps.
Yes. And you had to sit there in front of everybody and count out the stamps.
Yes.
It was a little embarrassing.
It was.
But you know what? It got you off your butt to get a job.
It did.
Well, now it's just a credit card.
Nobody can tell the difference. No.
Well, they call it, is that EBT now?
Something like that. It's a food card.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right.
And don't get me wrong. People do need that.
Absolutely. But the thing is,
but there's so many people
if
that
the government is running it, Ed, we know this, it will eventually be abused.
Sure, because they don't check.
The government, whenever it becomes involved, no matter how many do-gooders are involved, it's going to be abused. This is why we always say that you'll get more out of the private charities, philanthropic groups, and the free market will do a better job of helping people that really, truly need the help.
But isn't it...
That's always the case.
Isn't it strange that the government doesn't check on people that are stealing and basically freeloading? But they're going to hire 87,000 IRS agents to check on the people that are working.
To go after companies that are providing jobs.
That's what we used to call bass backwards.
It really is. All right. We got a couple of minutes before our top 10, Ed. I got to ask you this question. I just saw it on the news.
Yeah.
We've been worried a little bit about Tom Brady. He took some time off before the season. He came back. But is there trouble in Dodge City with his marriage? What's going on?
We're talking about Tom Brady and Giselle Bundchen.
And Giselle, his wife.
Well, my overall thing is it's not our business.
Because
of the fact of what he does for a living.
He's a celebrity,
what she does
let's be
for
honest.
A living,
yeah.
That might put a piece of the puzzle together because back when he left for 11 days.
From training camp.
That one of the players, Devin White, the linebacker, said, "We're praying for him," and we didn't understand. Maybe they
foreboding.
Knew that this was them trying to repair their marriage, and that would fit for him saying, "We're praying for him."
That would
hopefully that you know it gets his marriage. But listen, Giselle knows who Tom is. Tom knows who Giselle is. Not every marriage is going to work out. You know, and
the D word has been coming up, Ed.
Sure, I know. Divorces, you know, they've hired attorneys. Maybe they'll work it out. You know, he's
kind of hope they will.
You think they'd wait until the what do we got? Like 3-4 months before football season's over? Because I don't think he's going to do another year. I really don't. I'd be surprised if he did.
Another year of being married to her, or another year of doing football.
No,
I know you mean football.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I've seen him. He loves his wife. He loves his kids, and
I'm sure he does.
Maybe this is just to get his attention. You don't know.
Could be. Yeah. Well, let's hope that it works out for both of them.
I hope it works out for the family. Both of them.
Okay, and one more quick. The Tampa Bay Rays.
Good God! I did a report this morning. I said last night in Boston, it was rainy and ugly. And then the Rays stepped out on the field.
Ed does not have high hopes in the playoffs.
And I think the players are getting a little antsy with this 4-game slide, and it doesn't appear that there's any sense of urgency.
Do we know who they're going to play in the
playoffs? Yes.
Who are they playing?
They will play the Don't Call Me Indians Guardians.
Oh, are they?
Yes.
Oh, that'll be interesting.
They'll open out. It's a best of three. So
best of three.
Rays are only going to get one game at home.
Okay. And finally, Aaron Judge has hit his 62nd home run.
Class guy.
It seems like he's a class guy. We know he's not on steroids.
No. I'd still like him tested just in case.
Really?
There's nothing. Why not?
Okay.
Now, how about the guy that caught the ball?
How about the guy that tried to and fell?
Yeah. Maybe he could help pay his medical bill. I don't know.
I don't know about that.
But the guy's holding on the ball, and he says he's going to sell it. And rightfully so.
I don't blame him.
You know, why not?
He's going to get some good money.
The kid that caught the 60th or the 61st gave it to Aaron Judge, just gave it back.
Yeah, that was a classic.
Yeah. But, hey, I don't know if I do. You know, baseball players
make. But Judge might hit another one, and then that one, the 61st, will be a little less valuable.
A little less valuable. Yeah,
we'll
but still.
It'll still be valuable. All right. Time for our top 10. I'll get over to the drums, please. This is the top 10 greatest movie directors. Now, look, everybody has their own opinion. This one comes from a site called EW.com. So here we go. Number 10. Federico Fellini.
Federico!
Yeah, you've heard of him, right? La Dolce Vita, 8 and a Half, Amarcord, great director. Number 9. Frank Capra. You know who he was?
No.
Okay. It Happened One Night. It won every major Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
He was the director. It's a Wonderful Life. You've heard of that movie? He was the director.
Yeah,
Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. He was the director.
Black and white.
It was always these the common man that tries to do the right thing and how society finally, you know, is helped by them.
Gotcha.
Number 8. Ingmar Bergman, Swedish director. Great director. Persona was one of his movies. The Seventh Seal, Fanny and Alexander. So there you go. Number 7, Buster Keaton. You've heard of Buster Keaton.
Sure. Yeah.
The silent comedian. Some consider The General, the movie that he was starred in and directed and produced, the greatest movie ever made. But The General, Sherlock Jr., The Navigator, among some of his movies. Number 6, Akira Kurosawa.
Easy for you to say.
Exactly. And Rashomon, The Seven Samurai. That's a great movie, The Seven Samurai. And Rashomon is, too. Rashomon tells the story of 6 different interpretations of a murder from different people that saw it. It's really interesting. Number 5, Martin Scorsese.
He's kind of a strange fella.
Yeah, but he's made some pretty good movies. Raging Bull, Goodfellas, Taxi Driver. Yeah. By the way, all of them starred Robert De Niro.
When I was out in Hollywood at Seven's House.
Did you?
Yeah. Dude, took one of those tours, you know.
Yeah, was it impressive?
Big house.
Yeah, I'm sure. Number 4.
You didn't ask me in.
Oh. I don't think I'd want to go in his house.
Mm.
Number 4 is Howard Hawks. I don't know if you remember Howard Hawks. He was a, 40s, 50s, 30s. Anyway, Bringing Up Baby, that was a Cary Grant, Katharine Hepburn movie. Rio Bravo, a John Wayne Western. Number 3, have you ever heard of John Ford, the director John Ford?
No.
Okay. He made movies like The Searchers with John Wayne, The Quiet Man, another Wayne movie. A movie called How Green Was My Valley. He always had movies that stirred your emotions.
Mm.
Number 2, Orson Welles.
Orson?
Yeah, Orson Welles. Some consider his first movie, Citizen Kane, is the best ever made.
Mm.
But he also made one that followed up that was almost as good, called The Magnificent Ambersons.
Mm.
And he made one with Charlton Heston a few years after that, A Touch of Evil. All right, Ed. Who do you think is number 1 greatest movie director of all time? You know him.
I do?
Oh, yeah.
Give me a movie.
Psycho.
I was going to say that, and I'm trying to think of his name. The big neck, short, fat guy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Alfred Hitchcock.
Hitchcock, yeah.
Alfred Hitchcock.
I was thinking that, too.
I agree with this.
What was the name of the guy who was in Psycho?
He made so many great movies, I couldn't list them all, but Vertigo, Rear Window, and Psycho come to mind right there. All right. Thank you very much. We are going to be back on Friday. It's a beautiful day in Tampa Bay. Please be careful, and remember that freedom works.
Is my crown. Let me love and steal.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.